Physics World.
Hello, welcome to Physics World Weekly. Later on, I'll be joined by Hamish Johnston, who'll be sharing some of the headlines from our website this week. I understand he's got an intriguing update on the mysterious object they call Oumuamua that's been drifting through interstellar space and confounding scientists by its weird shape. First, though, I'm joined by a special guest from China. Xiaoshui Chen is a science journalist working for The Intellectual, a science news provider in Beijing, which, although it's only 3 years old, already has more than 1 million followers on the microblogging site Weibo.com and over 900,000 subscribers on the social media site WeChat. So one of the key things that helps The Intellectual stand out in China is that they don't shy away from some of the more controversial stories in science, which is something you just don't really see elsewhere in China. For example, they've had stories about the way public money has been spent on particular science infrastructure projects. And so far, this debating approach has been really popular among the academic community. They've won various awards for their journalism. For example, last year, they won the Best Investigative Reporting Prize from Tencent, the Chinese tech giant. And Physics World has an agreement with The Intellectual where each month they translate and share several of our articles, and we're hoping to strengthen that partnership. And that's why Xiaoshui has come to Bristol to find out more about what we do and also to share the story behind The Intellectual. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, James. Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
No problem. So do you want to start, maybe tell us a little bit more about The Intellectual and what it is?
Yeah, The Intellectual is a science news outlet in Chinese, and its target audience is the scientists in China, Chinese scientists and young students, and also some the people who pursued a life with intellect and independent thinking and critical thinking. So the content, the Intellectual covers many fields, including physics, chemistry, mathematics, and biology, and also society. Yeah.
You said you cover lots of different areas of science. Are you covering research that's taking place in China, or are you also looking at international news stories?
Yeah, we are covering news stories not only in China but around the world. For example, we covered the CRISPR. CRISPR is a gene editing technology that's from USA. Yeah, and also we covered physics. Yes. For example, the gravitational, the LIGO.
LIGO. Yeah, and I mean, how about you yourself? How did you get involved with this? I mean, were you a scientist by training or a journalist?
In fact, I don't have science background when I was in college. My master's degree is international journalism and communication, and I entered this field 4 years ago. At that time, I quitted from my last job. I used to work at Decathlon. It's a sports sales chain store.
I think we have that here. I bought a tent there fairly recently.
Yeah. At that time, one of my friends worked at Mixed Science. Mixed Science is a publication.
Mr. Science.
Yes. Yeah. It's a publication launched in June of 2014. So he asked me if I could be a freelancer for this publication. And this publication covers science. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, I want to have a try because I used to be a journalist. Yeah. When I wrote several pieces for Mr. Science, I felt, wow, it's a new world for me because there are many new exciting advances, and also I can learn new things. Yeah, I felt peaceful when I read these papers. So I noticed that they were hiring a full-time journalist. So our editors left Mrs. Science and studied another new publication, The Intellectual. So I followed with them. I joined them.
Fascinating. So I mean, one of the missions I know you said when we spoke previously about The Intellectual is you're trying to encourage critical thinking around science and its impact on society in general. Can you give an example of some of the stories, perhaps one of them that you have covered, and I guess the challenges as well in covering a story like that, and sort of the things you have to be careful about.
In fact, the example I want to share is about the gene editing tool, but of course it's not related to physics, but it's a story that I think that will made the audience in China rethink of science. In 2016, a scientist in Shijiazhuang, Hebei province, claimed that he invented another gene editing tool called Enjiago. And the intellectual followed this story immediately. And we have a long feature about this man, this scientist, and his invention. And because this scientist, the university this scientist worked at is not a very famous university, but his work seemed inspiring and incredible. So many other media followed our story. Yeah, they came to that university and they interviewed their scientists and his group.
So initially, everybody was thinking, everybody knows, this is a huge breakthrough.
It's a huge breakthrough. And some media even called his invention is a Nobel Prize work. A Nobel work. Yes. So, but later on, some scientists said they could not reproduce this work. Yeah. So, in fact, I am the author of that that feature story. So, I was also suspicious about their work. So I went to some other scientists and to interview them, and also interview the scientists of that technology. Later, I think in the August of 2017, the scientist, the scientist that claimed to invent the new technology retracted his paper from Nature Biotechnology.
That kind of reporting, I mean, is that quite unusual in China? You know, to be you were effectively questioning the validity of this huge finding. Is that quite unusual to see that in the media in China?
No, I think many media follow this story, but Intellectual was the first one to
cover the story.
And also I follow this story. I think many audience came to know that the papers are not always right. And as me, for me as a journalist, because that's my first time to report such a big event, such a big news, so I came to know that the scientists could make mistakes, and I should report the facts cautiously.
I think that's it's one of the challenges all over the world in reporting science, is that I think sometimes the public is maybe not aware of the full process of science. You know, somebody puts forward a result, and then it's the job of the rest of the science community to try and reproduce the same result. And so it's not always that a scientist is trying to deceive. It's sometimes just that they think they have a result, but maybe it's not as groundbreaking as they hope.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, from then on, the intellectual is cautious on to use some phrases such as breakthrough, groundbreaking.
Yes,
so we will not use that at all. Yeah. So, I mean, take it seriously.
Of course.
More seriously. Yeah.
And I mean, in reporting that story, I mean, were you slightly worried? Because, I mean, obviously, some readers could interpret that as you questioning the scientist, you know, as a professional. So were you worried at all that there might be some kind of backlash?
Sorry, what is backlash?
Let's put it a different way. Just that it can be quite powerful to publish a story like that. It gets lots of attention.
Yeah.
And so were you worried that, you know, perhaps the scientist involved would be offended, or would be, oh yeah, there could be some impact on you. There could be some response from those scientists.
Okay. Because the intellectual is a private media, it's not sponsored by the government. Mm. So we have the freedom. The journalists have freedom to write down what they know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to write down to interview different scientists to present their ideas, opinions. So in most cases, the journalists at the intellectual, they don't have to consider the impact the scientists put to us. But in some cases, on some important issues, on some big events, we will consider if we have to publish this story, we have to cover this, perhaps we will show the quotes to them.
To check facts. I mean, one of the other things we've spoken about during your week here, you said yesterday, I think, that among the science community, they're starting to see the benefit of getting science coverage. So do you think that is related to a change in the way in Chinese culture and the way that science is perceived among the public? And what are the potential benefits to scientists of having their research covered in the media? You know, could it help them to get more funding for their projects, for example?
In fact, I do not have the accurate data of if the media exposure helped the scientists get funding. But I do see some scientists get more income from some companies or publishers because of the media coverage, media exposure. For example, some scientists have the public lectures to the pupils, and they can get these lectures collection to a book to publish. So many students will buy, many parents will buy the book for their kids. So that's one example. And the other is, in fact, you see that China has made great progress these years in science. Yeah. So another government put more attention to the science popularization. Mm. Yeah. And so they encourage the scientists to go to the public and to talk with the public and to introduce their work to the public. So that's a trend in China.
I think, I mean, it's been an ongoing trend here as well in the UK. I know that often when people apply for research money, within the application they have to explain the benefits back to society. So, you know, and often that they have to talk about outreach activities they've done, so people are involved in giving public talks and writing articles for a magazine. So it sounds like in China that's starting to be similar.
Yeah, but China is still, I think, in the initial stage.
Mm.
Yeah. In fact, we, as a journalist, I envy the fellow journalists in UK or in Europe or in USA because they can perhaps, it's easy to contact scientists to comment or to get an interview. But in China still, we got no reply.
Yeah.
That's the facts.
Yeah,
but still, but still more and more scientists would like to talk with the media and to present their ideas and to comment something. Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's, in a way, it's an opportunity for you because I mean, here in the UK, it's quite an established machine now. So whenever somebody has a big result, there'll be a press release and there might be a press conference. And so often you see the same news story appearing in all the different publications because they've all had access to the same information. So for somebody like an organisation like The Intellectual, you know, you're breaking new ground. You know, you're establishing yourself as pioneers. So it sounds like you're in a good place to make a real impact and to see that difference in China.
Yeah, because our editors-in-chief are three scientists. And they are in the academia. So they know what happened in the academia, what is important thing, what is should be pay attention to. So we have the responsibility to present to the public what happened in academia. So for example, referring to the CPC,
CEPC.
CPC, yeah.
So this is the it's a proposed successor to the Large Hadron Collider at CERN. So it's a next generation proposed for China.
Yeah. It's proposed by the Chinese scientists. Yeah. So there are different opinions on this project, on this program. So, at first, this program was reported by some official media in China, but it's about this project, it's about this program, but there's non-scientist give comments to this. So the intellectual wanted to know the opinions from the physicists.
So you wanted to know whether the physicists in China thought it was a good use of public money to invest in
because
project.
It costs much.
Yes.
So the intellectual invited some scientists to comment to this. And as you can see, there are different voices. I think this debate lasted 2 weeks.
So you had lots of different high-profile physicists in China giving their opinion on whether this project is worthwhile.
Yeah. And then other media came to know, it's very important. Yeah, so they just followed this issue, followed this news. Yeah.
Because we at Physics World, we also made a story about the fact that you'd written a story. So it's definitely helping to get the word out and to think
that's a really big thing.
So
still China I think is discussing about this project.
I mean maybe just finally, I mean do you have any plans then to develop The Intellectual? What are your next steps with the publication?
Yeah, we want to have more journalists.
Yeah,
because there are many things happening related to science. Yeah, so I think we will recruit more journalists to cover more topics, especially the topics that are related to our society and life, daily life. Yeah.
And do you think it will continue to be published 100% in Chinese, in Mandarin, or could you see a day when you would also have an English language version for international audiences?
Yeah, I hope I hope we can launch the English version soon. But next year, the focus of the intellectual next year is still producing valuable content to our Chinese audience.
You've been in Bristol then this week. What are your impressions on our city? It's slightly smaller than Beijing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quiet. Yeah.
In a good way?
it's quite clean. And people here are very hospitable.
Hospitable,
yeah. Because
not hostile.
Hospitable. Yeah. Because yesterday I went to a local supermarket, a local store to buy the charging adapter. Mm. Yes. And the three people helped me, yeah, for that. The staff at the first store told me that they do not have that adapter, but he showed me which store will have. So I followed his guide.
There you go. Yeah. So he's probably being sacked by his boss now for sending you to a different business. But
yeah.
In the name of friendliness.
And finally I got the adapter, so I can use my laptop.
Good stuff. Yeah. Okay, yeah, well, thanks for joining us today, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your trip here.
Thank you, James.
So I'm joined now by Hamish Johnston, Physics World General Physics Editor.
Hi, James.
How are you doing today? You good?
I'm fine, thanks. A little soggy after the huge rainstorm we had this morning.
Yeah, it's been miserly, isn't it?
Certainly is.
Yeah. So what stories have stood out this week on the website? I heard you talking earlier with some of the other journalists about this mysterious object, Oumuamua. Do you want to maybe just remind us what the backstory is here?
Well, Oumuamua is, as you say, a mysterious interstellar object that first came on the scene in October 2017. And after studying this object for a while, astronomers came to the conclusion that it is a visitor from interstellar space, and it is the first object within the solar system that has been identified as coming in from outside of the solar system. So it's very exciting. It's also a very strange object. It appears to be about 230 meters long and sort of shaped like a cigar or a pencil. So a very strange shape to begin with. And there's been a considerable amount of debate about whether it's an asteroid or a comet. And some of that debate has focused on the observation that it is moving strangely through the solar system. So if you do a calculation, you calculate the effect of the sun and the planets, the gravitational effect on Oumuamua, you discover that you can't explain Oumuamua's trajectory. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that some people have put forth is that it is actually outgassing. So the sun is heating Oumuamua.
As it's propelling itself.
Exactly. Gas is coming off and it's propelling itself. Other people don't think that's the case. There's sort of, you know, it's very difficult to see this thing, even though it's in the solar system. It's actually very small.
So how have they seen it so far? What telescope did they use?
Well, it was first spotted using PanSTARRS, which is a Hawaiian-based telescope. And that's why it has a Hawaiian name. I think Oumuamua means scout in the Hawaiian language. But yeah, things have got very exciting now, I suppose, because a distinguished astronomer at Harvard University, Avi Loeb, and a colleague of his have taken a close look at the data on Oumuamua, and they've come to the conclusion that it could be a light sail created by an advanced alien civilization.
Are they saying this for real, or is it they're saying based on the evidence they've seen, there's nothing that says it isn't, or, you know, what have they got any more data that other people don't have access to?
No. I think what they're doing is they're trying to explain the data. Yeah. And so I suppose some of the key things that they're looking at, first of all, they're looking at this strange motion through the solar system. And if Oumuamua is not outgassing, then how do you explain this strange motion through the solar system? They say that it can be explained by Oumuamua being pushed by light from the sun, essentially acting as a solar sail or a light sail.
So in order to feel the effects of the sun, it would have to be very thin, I guess.
Well, that's the amazing thing here, is that another thing that Loeb and his colleague are saying is that astronomers could be wrong about the actual size of a Oumuamua. I mean, I think at the moment, the estimate is that it's about 200 meters long and shaped like a cigar. But their argument is that Oumuamua is much more reflective than previously thought. And therefore, it's much smaller than previously thought. Because, of course, estimates on the size of the object are based on how much light is reflected from it. So they're saying that it could be just a few meters across. And very intriguingly, they're saying that it could be less than a millimeter thick.
Wow, I mean, surely something that thin, subjected to so many forces, would it not just crumble and break?
Well, no. I mean, first of all, they say that if it is a millimeter thick, then it can't be made of rock. Right, so it can't be of natural origin, and so that's where they're getting to the alien built light sail explanation.
So it could be some advanced ultra tough fabric that doesn't break anyway.
Yes, that's right. That's what it could be, and so that's their explanation, and as well as explaining the fact that the motion through the solar system is odd. They say that the very thin, the possibility that this could be very thin, could also explain some of the tumbling motion of a Oumuamua. So instead of being cigar-shaped, perhaps it's actually a sail built by aliens. And in a statement that Loeb has put out, he's even gone so far as suggesting that this could be an active mission to the solar system.
Does he speculate as to what they might be doing, why they've come?
Well, I think he does mention in this press statement that he's put out that it could be somehow transmitting data back to a civilization somewhere. I think he does point out that we have no evidence that it's transmitting data back to its originator, but he does open that as a possibility, and this is this is serious research. It's going to be published in Astrophysical Journal Letters next week, and a preprint is available on the archive server.
Has there been any response yet from other scientists to these claims?
I'm not sure about that. I've this has appeared in a few media outlets, and I'm writing a story about it right now. So check my story. The working title for the story is Interstellar Object Oumuamua an Alien Light Sail? And that'll be by the time the podcast goes up, that'll be on the website. So
in the millions of views, I reckon, by that point.
Stay tuned for the answer.
So apart from aliens coming and taking over the galaxy, what else has been making the headlines this week?
Well, we've got another story that has to do with space travel, human space travel, actually. And this is a study, a magnetic resonance imaging study of how space travel alters the brain. This is a news article that was written by Sam Jarman, one of our regular contributors. And an international team of neuroscientists has done scans on brains of astronomers who have spent significant amount of time at the International Space Station.
Astronomers or...
Astronauts. Yeah. Right. Actually, I think more precisely cosmonauts. I think they were Russian.
Russians.
And I think the average amount of time that these people had spent in space is 189 days. And the study revealed a significant change or reduction in the volume of gray matter in the brains of these astronauts, cosmonauts. And so that's very interesting.
Anything else?
Staying within medical physics and within the head. We've got a news story about tiny robots. Everybody loves a news story about tiny robots. This is entitled, Magnetic Nanorobots Could Treat Retinal Diseases. And the idea here is that tiny propeller-shaped robots could be placed within the eye, and they would propel themselves using propellers and steered using magnetic fields. And they could be used to deliver drugs to parts of the eye that are very difficult to reach at the moment.
Yeah, and then any environmental news?
Well, it's funny you should ask. Our environmental specialist, Liz Kelleher, has written an article that's called Getting Engaged, What Encourages the Public to Marry Up with Environmental Research. So this was based on a presentation by Alison Robinson, who works for the UK's Natural Environment Research Council. She was talking about the Engaging Environments program in Bristol, and at an event to mark the funding of 6 projects over the last year. And in her article, Liz talks about some of these projects. There's a project called Climate Stories, which is led by Peter Stott at the University of Exeter. And that has actually produced a book, which I've got here.
Oh, yeah.
It's the book is called Climate Stories. We all have a story to tell about climate change. And it has a selection of poems, stories, song lyrics, performance pieces, and prints that have been inspired by climate science. So that's one of the 6 projects. Other projects aim to engage communities with their environment. There's one about the future of the seas. There's also a project called Opening Up Science for All that aims to enable ongoing active and routine engagement with environmental research for the public. So you can read more about that in Liz's piece on physicsworld.com.
Okay, great. Well, that's all we have time for today. And as always, you can find out about all of those stories that Hamish has just been talking about over at the Physics World website. So we'll be back next week when, among other things, we'll be talking about quantum technologies with our industry editor, Margaret Harris. So join us then.
Physics World.